Chris Staplin, welcome to the show. I think that we're going to call these episodes Business Bites. I think the name's still a work in progress, maybe Business Bites with Randall and Chris. But for those of our listeners who don't know who you are, Chris, why don't you go ahead and give a short introduction?
Thanks, Randall. Yep, Chris Taplin. I live in the UK, but I've worked for mainly in the software industry for a little brief manufacturing. But for some of the names like SAP and Adobe and Oracle, others maybe not heard of, startups, pre-IPOs, big global things. And I've gone independent in the last year and helping advising companies on how to get the best they can out of their teams that are in the space called pre-sales or solution consulting. It's got various different names.
Yeah, Randall O'Shea here. I live in the United States. I live in Florida. I love the weather here. I spent most of my career in banking, finance, and wealth management. And a couple years ago, I transitioned to starting to work for tech companies, startups specifically. And I guess now I'm a podcaster, or maybe a part-time hobbyist podcaster. But Chris and I think our collective hope here is to bring you a weekly episode where we talk about a specific business topic and sort of deconstruct how to be effective and efficient with whatever we're discussing, right? So this week, one of the first things that we wanted to discuss was effective communication in the workplace. So what does that mean to you? What are your first thoughts?
First thoughts are that every company I've ever worked at, people say communication could be better here. And so it's obviously a continual effort to be better at communicating. I certainly would associate it with a good culture. And I just mean that you are able to provide an environment where most of the organization understands the strategy and are sort of aligned with the goals of the organization. And that there is a focus really on clear communication, be it verbal, nonverbal, written, yeah, in the form of emails, the presentation decks, everything is thought about.
What do you think the importance of that is, right? So we know communication is important. We know communicating effectively is important. But maybe we look at it from two aspects of why is core communication bad for an organization? And then how can good communication up-level an organization?
Yeah, I suppose the why first bit is the story here, really. I was a leader of a team that I knew really well. I'd been the peer of theirs and I became their manager. And we all got on very well. I think we all understood each other very well. And then during a period of big reorganization, I ended up being a manager and 96 people suddenly reporting to me. And then I realized how many different ways people could misunderstand things that I said because they didn't know me so well, and they were hearing the message and interpreting it. I mean, the 96 different ways I almost felt. And then the problem I also had was I would be talking to 8 managers, and those managers could put their spin on it before it went down to the rest of the team. So effective communication hampers the organization massively because, you know, you're in a situation where you can't be in every meeting with people. You need them to be making decisions in the general strategy and the general direction that you would do if you were there. You can't be. And so the company will grind to a halt, I'd say, with poor communication. And so, yeah, the flip side, I suppose, for the rest of it, you've got an opportunity for good decision making at source in front of clients in all the meeting rooms that are going on because everybody's on message and that message has been communicated in sufficient way that people have understood it in all the different ways you have to communicate to make someone understand something, and they're on message. That's probably the best way I'd say it.
You mentioned strategy a few times. I mean, I've worked at many organizations, but I've worked at some organizations that were better at communicating what the strategy is. Like, these are the outcomes that we want to produce. We don't necessarily care how you do it. Here are some parameters, right? You got to follow the laws and policies and procedures and regulations, depending on what industry you're in. But this is ultimately where we want to get to. We want to increase revenue. We want to decrease expenses. We want to grow our customer base. And that's sort of broadly speaking, but that's the strategy. Some organizations I've been a part of have done a very poor job of communicating what that overall strategy was. Like, they, you know, kept it, like the senior leaders might have known that, but they didn't do a good job of pushing that down, nor the thought process might have been that they thought it wasn't necessary to push that strategy down, right? The people at the bottom of the org, I think the decision was made that they don't need to know that. They just need to do their job. I would disagree with that. Then I've worked at other organizations that have been more than open to share what the objectives are, what the strategies are. And I think that's a much more effective way to move forward as an organization, because everybody knows what you're trying to achieve. So yes, there might be poor communication sometimes. The messaging might not be clear, but if everybody knows where the destination is, if everybody knows what we're trying to accomplish at the end of the day, they can make decisions themselves that align with that overall mission. So I think if you're going to be ineffective communicators about everything else, make sure that at least you're getting the one thing right, and the one thing right should be what the strategy is. Because if everybody knows what the strategy is, everybody knows what the mission is, they can make their own decisions. And hopefully more of those are the right decisions that move themselves and the organization forward and not steps back. And then as a leader, some of the decision made, maybe they weren't the right ones, but then that's where you can coach and influence and guide how they're going about their day, how they're going about their work. Have any thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, I think you just kept putting focus on strategy, because the other sort of definition of your problem statement could be the sort of Jeff Bezos kind of, you can't use PowerPoint slides. You've got to send a discussion document round that everyone needs to be assumed to have not read it, and then sit quietly in the meeting room while you read it. And then you're only discussing all of those things that are communication also. I just think that I've worked in many companies where things have been moving very quickly. The company's been growing very quickly. And it's the strategy element is what I was fixing on for communication, because it was vitally important that everyone understood the guiding principles that a strategy gives you to help you make those decisions, focus all of your efforts in that direction, and test any other distractions. As is it driving the strategy? No, well, stop doing it. So, you know, it's a principle you're applying to your everyday in your workplace to sustain the strategy. So that was much more important to me than to be worrying about whether you have to sit in a stand-up meetings only. Those are the aspects of communication.
Got it. I think generally accept the principles about effective workplace communication. Active listening, I think, is a big one, whether you're working with a colleague or you're working with a client. I think active listening, we all can agree that that's important. But what is that, right? So let's get into that for a moment. You know, so active listening techniques, what are some of maybe your favorite ones that have helped you communicate better?
Influenced by a book that I've been reading at the moment by a guy called Chris Voss, who's wrote Never Split the Difference. So an FBI hostage negotiator, and then he talks about how to use negotiation. Now, first of all, I mean, his technique is really to try and get people to be comfortable, but it's still applicable that the idea of paraphrasing, playing back what you've heard in your language is a super important element to it. He also, actually, when you just repeat the last few words of each of the sentence the person's just said, and just get them to give you more information. Obviously, there's a reason why he's asking that, but I also know that in effective communication, the first thing that people are saying is not necessarily really the root of what their problem is, or the actual most important thing that they're saying. So it's ability to really be able to show that you've interpreted it, playing it back. And also, I think active listening is keep you quiet and then trying to get them to elicit more and more information with pauses or playing back the last few words they said.
Yeah, I think pauses is important. I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with silence. And then as soon as one person stops talking, it's like a nervous twitch, right? They feel they need to fill that space. But I've learned that if you don't fill the space, if you just let that breathe for a moment, that's where magic happens in conversations. So that would be a pointer that I would recommend, is not all pauses, not all silence needs to be filled. Just give that a moment or two and then see what happens. And maybe for the listeners out there, try to, like, that's an easy action step that you could probably implement today if you try to. So a couple of points that Chris made, and maybe I'll elaborate on a few of those, but I think it's important to give your full attention. If you're, again, talking to a colleague or a prospective client, existing client, don't be on your phone. Don't be checking email. Don't be responding to Slack messages. Give your full attention. Pay attention to nonverbal cues, right? So people nod in agreement. Sometimes when I'm on Zoom calls, I'll put my arms up like, yes, great point. I think that's a good, great nonverbal cue. Like I'm engaged, I'm understanding. Maybe sometimes they get a little overpassionate, right? Whatever. Paraphrase. Chris said this too. Repeat back to them what they said, but use your own words. That shows them that you're listening. And I think ultimately, you know, when you're having a conversation, that you want that conversation to go somewhere. And if you want to get more information from a client, or if you want to get more information from a colleague, reinforcing the idea that you are giving your full intention and attention promotes that conversation to go further and get it to where you want it to be, right? Avoid interrupting. I'm bad at this. Some things I get very passionate about, and I'm like, I can't wait to say this thing because I think it's super important or it's going to make me look super smart, right? You can't interrupt. Obviously, that's rude. Take a note. Remember it. Write it down. I'm an avid note taker. I think that that's important. Control your passion and excitement and enthusiasm. I have to work on that myself. And then sometimes it's a matter of showing empathy. Probably Chris Voss talks about this because he is an FBI hostage negotiator. But how did that person that he's negotiating with get to where they are now, right? I'm sure it wasn't their first move to be a criminal. Understanding that and putting yourself in the other person's shoes that you're communicating with, I think that can also be, you know, quite powerful as well. So sort of talked about, you know, broadly so far, understanding the strategy. So there can be like that decentralized communication for people to make decisions on their own. Talked about active listening techniques and why those are important. But what about written communication, say like via email? Do you have any suggestions about how to effectively communicate via email?
It's an interesting one, actually, because I've been taught several different things during my time. Obviously, being brief and be bold and be simple. People don't have time to read a long email is where I've really come from. Some cultures, though, I came across as very rude because I was pretty sharp, just to the point, in and out. You'll notice some people email without putting hi, someone's name, thanks, such and such at the end, just the straight statement. And I had sort of feedback that I was, you know, in certain cultures just came across really, really rude. I've recently, as an independent consultant, been posting quite lengthy emails now. It summarizes that I've understood and listened to the meeting I've just had with a prospective client and that I've picked up on a lot of the facts that came out. And then I'm also trying to give some interpretation and some thoughts of what I've heard, because I'm trying to establish myself as somebody important and useful and intelligent and so forth. So I've gone full circle, really. I considered emails that might take me a couple of days to do because I am trying to have an impact. I'm not working where I'm just pinging out emails to people who work for me, and it doesn't matter so much. So yeah, I think normal cases be brief, but if you're showing some intelligence, maybe you'll have a lasting effect on somebody.
I think it's excellent advice. And one of the things I think that we talked about in verbal communication and email as well is paraphrasing, is repeat back to them what you might have heard, but this time you're writing that. And the idea is like, hey, I was listening. This is what you said. This is how I interpret it. And I'm playing that back to you. But instead, it's in an email. I would say it's important, like, you know, different cultures you had mentioned have a different standard or expectation. So I think overall, whether communicating verbally or written, know your audience and also know your objective. What do you want to get out of this conversation? What do you want to get out of this email? And then you can write or verbally communicate to that end, right? You know what you want to accomplish. I also think it's, again, you have to know your audience, but I think people misconstrue and confuse that you can be direct, but you can be friendly. One of the ways you can be friendly is by starting all the emails with, hey, hi, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I think that that goes a long way as well, right?
Basically, teach myself to stop doing that after the complaints came back and come on. Yeah. It's just, I know what it was. It was us. What we think, you know, forget the point I was going to make. Right in the middle of a meeting, it's much more akin to a team's message than it is an email.
Yeah, I think that's important too. A good point about different people have different expectations. But for me, my text messages look different than my emails, right? Yeah. My Slack messages look different than my emails. So I think at least that's my perspective. Don't send me a Slack if it should have been an email, right? That's my opinion. But I think this was all good information. I learned a few things from Chris and his experiences. I hope our listeners out there were able to pick a few helpful points out of our discussion today. But before we wrap up the first episode of this Business Bites, name still a work in progress, Chris, you have any final thoughts, concerns, considerations you'd like to share?
Well, I feel you just got to treat people how you wish to be treated. So, you know, all forms of communication, think of that point.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris.